This is Pure Ducking, show number 394 for Thursday, May 28th, 2020. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and the fact that I think I've managed to get away with no boomer and tumor news for today. I'm Morps. Tonight I am drinking some, what bourbon did I grab? I forgot what bourbon this is. Madman, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking Monkey Shoulder, which is scotch. And when that's over, I'll probably grab a Coke because scotch bottle is out of reach of my headset.
Fair enough. Well, whichever one I grabbed, it was a strong one. It tastes like 100 proof. I think it's a single barrel, but I'm forgetting which of the single barrels it is.
If it's 100 proof, it'd be Maker's Cask Strength.
No, it's not that, because I don't have any of that. I'm just blanking. I know the bottle. I'm just blanking on the name of the damn bottle. Oh, well. It'll come to me later. But, anyway, so it's probably going to be a bit of a short show tonight, partially because I'm really tired. And, well, everybody else is... Well, let's see. Suave and BSV and Static are all off playing video games. RU is lost somewhere in the Australian outback. And, I think, I think Fox just doesn't have any internet at the moment. So, just you and me tonight, Madman. Unless you can think of any other funny reasons people aren't here.
I'm going to go with, Sard. Was abducted by aliens years ago and replaced.
Oh, they
That's why he hasn't been regularly on.
Yeah, the batteries ran down. They haven't come back in to recharge them.
Yeah, and Foxwolf, the Masons have decided he needs to be put down.
Oh,
they sent a bunch of Shriner clowns to his house with seltzer water and pellet guns. And they're attempting to drown him with squirt guns filled with seltzer water. This is taking a while. That's why he occasionally pops in.
Yeah, Psychros is saying, I assume with the whole city of Minneapolis on fire, BSV is somehow involved. Yes, he is currently standing over on one of the adjacent buildings laughing maniacally.
Roasting marshmallows next to the inferno. Getting the distance right on that is difficult.
So... Let's see, Laser. Why is Laser not on the show tonight? Laser's not on the show tonight because he is currently driving cross-country on a vision quest to try to find his spirit animal, Ron Swanson. I can't think of any better ones. What do you got? Madman, why is Static not on the show tonight?
Why is Static? Oh, he's having his 12th, bypass. They're probably going to cyberdize his heart now.
Going full on prosthetic.
Yep. They found the Picard heart. They're going to stick it in him. I'm waiting for him to get a metal left arm, though. That'll be awesome.
That will be awesome. Okay, that joke's dumb. So I guess we'll go right into it. So Psychros sent me the lead story tonight, and that's on this Trump executive order, which basically is dominating everything right now when trying to look up tech news. So he sent me a BuzzFeed article, which was a mile and a half long, and this Axios write-up. So we're going to go with the Axios write-up. Let's see. Trump signs executive order targeting protections for social media platforms. President Trump signed an executive order on Thursday designed to limit the legal protections that shield social media companies from liability for the content users post on their platforms. What they're saying, currently social media giants like Twitter receive unprecedented liability shield based on the theory that they are a neutral platform, which they are not, Trump said in the Oval Office. We are fed up with it. It is unfair. It's been very unfair. The state of play. The order comes after the president escalated his attacks against big tech in recent days, specifically Twitter, which fact-checked him for the first time this week over an unsubstantiated claim that mail-in voting drives voter fraud. The president and many on the right have long alleged that tech platforms police conservative viewpoints more heavily. The Trump administration convened conservative critics of social media platforms for a social media summit last year focused solely on the topic. An Axios analysis last year found that stories about the 2020 presidential election that drove the most engagement online often came from right-wing media outlets. The order focuses on a portion of the Communications Decency Act known as Section 230, which grants broad liability protections to tech platforms from civil lawsuits when it comes to what users post and what would direct the Commerce Department to press the Federal Communications Commission to create a new regulation aimed at pulling back that shield. It also asks that the Federal Trade Commission to report on acts of political bias collected by the White House. Attorney General Bill Barr said the administration is preparing legislation as well. The Trump administration has long mulled reining in Section 230, and the Justice Department convened a workshop earlier this year on the topic. Trump said he expects the executive order to draw a lawsuit. Despite this executive order, the president does not have unilateral power to regulate tech companies and social media platforms. This week, a federal appeals court ruling in a case brought by conservative activists against social media companies affirmed that private websites are not public spaces and social media companies do not have First Amendment obligations. Any truly strong limits to Section 230 would almost certainly require action by Congress. Senator Josh Hartley said in a series of tweets Wednesday that he would introduce legislation to strip platforms of their protections if they offer what he described as editorializing. Section 230 has long had critics on both the right and the left of the political spectrum who argue it allows platforms to shirk a social responsibility to keep harmful and false information from spreading online. Its authors want to make it clear that online services would actively moderate their users' content without assuming liability for it. Although platforms must still police things like copyright violation, among Democrats, House Intelligence Chief Adam Schiff cites deepfake videos last year as a key issue that called Section 230 protections into question. Oh, that's the ones where they slowed down Nancy Pelosi. Is that what he's talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. And arguing the tech companies need to exercise proper standard of care when it comes to the whole variety of fraud. Okay. Stop. All this bullshit. And I don't care what side you're on. The platforms should not be taking sides in political arguments. They should be filtering out content that is illegal. If it's not illegal, they should leave it alone and let the platform run. What's happened is you have all these people trying to meddle with the algorithms, trying to ban people or put up fact-check links or, you know, like YouTube banning anybody who disagrees with the WHO. All that shit, no. Is it a neutral platform? If it's a neutral platform, it should get the Section 230 protections, and the platform should not be saying, oh, we disagree with this, so here's a fact-check link. And, you know, there's all kinds of politics around this shit. It should just, no. You just shouldn't be doing this one way or the other. And you're going to have, you know, people shrieking, oh, if you don't censor, these things we disagree with are going to spread online. And, yeah, some of them are bad. You're going to have really, really bad ideas spread online if nobody is stopping them. But at the same time, when you limit anybody discussing anything, like, you know, you look at YouTube right now where anybody tries to have any kind of meaningful political discussion, they're using code phrases, they're bleeping out words, they're doing all this bullshit trying to get around all of YouTube's filters because just mentioning a political thing on YouTube gets your channel demonetized, apparently. So, I mean, and Twitter putting fact-check links on what was a pretty hyperbolic and pretty, but also pretty opinion-based post, I think is pretty rough. And I there was some posts talking about apparently the guy in charge at Twitter for doing those kind of, you know, fact checks. His own Twitter account is super anti-Trump, so there's a bias question there. And I don't even really want to get into all the political bullshit around this. It really should just be a free-for-all. I mean, that's the idea of free speech, right? The only way to combat bad ideas is with better ideas. So it's like, okay, somebody's posting something really fucking stupid. You don't have to take it down. Let them continue to advertise that they're an idiot, and so no one should take them seriously. But, and you know, you've got all these busybodies who want these tech companies to censor one way or the other. So I'm not, even though I'm pretty sure Trump's executive order here, well, the executive order itself was probably written by a file clerk years ago, and it's just been sitting on the desk waiting for somebody to decide it was time to do it, as most of them are, on either party, by the way. Most laws are sitting in a clerk's desk somewhere, half of it written by a file clerk or a law clerk, the other half written by a lobbyist, but that's a different problem. But it's kind of knee-jerk and him being pissed off at Twitter for putting those fact-check links on there, and that's childish. And you could argue what he posted was childish. I mean, fine. I don't care. But the platform itself shouldn't be saying, oh, nope, he said something we didn't like. Here's the real article right below it. Go ahead, man, I got to catch up on the IRC. Apparently people are talking.
I was going to say, it may be knee-jerk, but it's also a long time coming. The social media sites seem to be erring on one side of the political aisle. So Trump says bullshit. Shit comes out of his mouth.
Yep.
I'll concede that. But shit comes out of the other side's mouth, and no one calls them on it when it comes to social media. My problem isn't as much that Trump gets called out, it's that it seems only Republicans get called out. And if they're going to call out one side, they need to call out both sides. And calling out any side is editorializing. So if you're going to be doing that, you're not a platform. You are a publicist, treated as a publicist.
Well, and that's kind of, I'm pretty much with you on that, right? It's like, okay, if you want to have a political opinion, cool, you now have a political opinion, you're doing editorial, which means you shouldn't be subject to the Section 230 protections against, Cycros is saying in the chat, it's mostly libel laws. I don't know if copyright. Yeah, the copyright would apply under the DMCA. I think that's a different law. I don't think we're even talking copyright here. I think it is mostly libel and I guess it would be slander since it's written.
Some of it's written, some of it's audio, depending on which platform are. But they are protected from libel, civil, and from a lot of copyright complaints.
So yeah, if your platform is going to be slanted in one direction or another. I guess that's a question too of how you define the platform, right? Like the fact check links right below Trump's tweets, that's a little much. I don't think they should have done that. But if you wanted to have like a section of Twitter that was dedicated just for a certain conversation, and if you went off topic, it was deleted. Okay, whoop-de-doo. I mean, Reddit does that kind of shit all the time, and I don't really have a major problem with it. But Reddit took over the Donald subreddit, kicked the original moderators off, and turned it into a anti-Trump subreddit. And then they came up with this quarantine thing, which I think is bullshit. It's like, no, it was a contained little environment. You know, somebody set up their environment, you just didn't like it, so you shut it down. So that kind of shit I don't think is cool. Because, yeah, I mean, either you're a platform or you're a editorial source, right?
And then when it comes to what he said, he may be wrong on how rampant voter fraud is, but voter fraud exists, and mail-in voter fraud is the most common. There are people that actually walk into polling places and commit fraud, but we're lucky enough that any stats I find on it suggests that it's minuscule. We don't really know for sure because a lot of states don't require ID. So no one's going to know how rampant the problem is. Just assume it's not that big when it comes to walk-in.
Well,
When it comes to mail-in ballots, we get dead people mailing in ballots all the time. So unless there's an actual zombie apocalypse that I'm unaware of, then mail-in ballots are a bit more of a problem than in-person.
Well, there is a zombie apocalypse. Have you not seen all the zombies walking around staring at their smartphones and walking out into traffic and into walls and shit?
Yeah. Like,
that's a different problem.
2012, over 2 million dead Americans voted.
So, I don't disagree with the premise. I think what Trump posted was hyperbolic, and I think he was... It was Trump being Trump is what it was. But it's just like, the dude is president. If you want him on your platform, then just be aware that you're going to have to, you know, put up with the way he posts. But I don't, you know, and it's easy enough to give, you know, for Twitter to come in and say, no, we're not doing anything to his account. He's president, right? That's an easy argument for them to make. It's like, you know, he's president. We're not doing politics. We're not doing anything to his account. It's flagged special. Fine. You know, would people like it? No, you'd always have somebody screaming for, he said something we didn't like, shut his account down. But you're going to have that on anybody from either side, right? You know, back when the internet first started up, all you had all the Christian groups out there and like mad trying to shut shit down. Nowadays, you have the SJWs trying to shut down anybody they disagree with. I mean, this idea that you should let an activist group silence anybody on any platform just to avoid controversy is a problem in my mind. So
that article actually lists what his executive order is.
They've got a link to it.
From what I've heard of the executive order, I don't even think it's overstepping. It's trying to get enforcement of what Congress has already passed with their safe harbor legislation.
I mean, I've got the link to the actual order right here. We could read it. It's kind of long for this show. Let's see. So I will just start here. By authority invested in President, Constitution, laws of the United States, this hereby follows. Section 1 policy, free speech is bedrock, our founding fathers, blah, 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 country that has long cherished freedom of expression, blah, 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 growth of online platforms. So he's claiming Twitter's the 21st equivalent of the public square. I mean, I could read this thing verbatim, but it's long. Do we really want to?
No. I was hoping it just had a section of, here's what we're doing, because a lot of that first part is justifying the order. It's not the order itself.
Here we go. Section 2, protections against online censorship. Is the policy of the United States to foster clear ground rules for running free and open debate on the internet? Prominent among the ground rules covering the debate is immunity from liability created by Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, Section 230C, 47 U.S. Code 230C. Is the policy of the United States that the scope of that immunity should be clarified? The immunity should not extend beyond its text and purpose to provide protection for those who purport to provide users a forum for free and open speech, but in reality use their power over a vital means of communication to engage in deceptive or pretextual actions, stifling free and open debate by censoring certain viewpoints. Section 230 was designed to address early court decisions holding that if an online platform restricted access to some content posted by others, it would therefore become a publisher of all content posted on its site for purposes of torts such as defamation. As the title of Section 230 makes clear, the provision provides limited liability protection to a provider of an interactive computer service, such as an online platform, that engages in good Samaritan blocking of harmful content. In particular, the Congress sought to provide protections for online platforms that attempted to protect minors from harmful content, and indeed to ensure such providers would not be discouraged from taking down harmful material. The provision was also intended to further the express vision of Congress that the internet is a forum for true diversity of political discourse. The limited protections provided by the statute should be construed with these purposes in mind. So, yeah, he's saying that Section 230 is too broad. Reinterpret it to be, yeah,
Yeah, so it's pretty much saying 230 was meant to allow these publishers to remove child pornography, graphic violence, pretty much to stay...
All the illegal shit.
Yeah, the illegal shit. Although graphic violence isn't necessarily illegal.
Well,
but
I,
yeah.
I could see a platform saying, what that lets a platform do from a legal standpoint is say, here's our policy. You know, if anything violates our policy, we are going to remove it. That's not editorial. That's just ground rules for interacting with a platform, right? And YouTube especially drives me weird because they've, you know, drives me up the wall with that because they've got their community guidelines, which are not policy, but they treat it like it's policy and it changes every day. Another problem. But, you know, and I'm guessing Twitter does something similar where they have their actual policy of what, you know, where they, you know, publish that, and then they've got their community guidelines, which is different and changes all the damn time. So, I don't know. I do think the criticism was right that if you're going to make any substantial changes to Section 230, other than just how it's interpreted by the Justice Department and other executive branches, that, yeah, it would be an act of Congress, but I think that's why they said that Bill Barr is looking into what do they need to do to adjust that law so that they could make a recommendation of law, because that's what they'll have to do, right? They'll have to take it to Congress and get an amendment passed if they actually want to change the text of the law. What this executive order does is just kind of give guidelines for interpreting it. Or am I missing something?
I don't think you're really missing anything. I don't even think it's even guidelines for interpreting it. I don't think that law has really been enforced because Congress is scared of stepping on Twitter's rights as a company.
Here we go.
Because they have editorialized.
Yeah.
Young Turks on YouTube are funded by YouTube. Their competition is demonetized.
Here we go. He's got a list of things he thinks aren't taken in good faith. The condition under which an action restricting access or availability of material is not taken in good faith with the meaning of subparagraph C2A of Section 230, particularly whether their actions can be taken in good faith if they are deceptive, pretextual, or inconsistent with the provider's terms of service, or B, taken after failing to provide adequate notice, reason, explanation, or a meaningful opportunity to be heard, and three, any other proposed regulations that the NTIA concludes may be appropriate to advance the policy. Yeah, so it looks like he's got some timelines here, and he's basically directing some of his different offices to give him recommendations on policy. So it's probably a bit knee-jerk, but I think you're going to have a lot of people blowing it out of proportion because, oh my God, he's talking about regulating Twitter because they did something mean, which actually, yeah, that is kind of what kicked it off, is that they put that fact check link on there and he didn't take it and he didn't like it. But, I mean,
that's honestly the only way you're going to get a politician's attention.
True.
And it is already in the law that they have to be neutral. And whether you like what they're doing or don't, you can say Facebook, Google in general,
well,
Twitter have not been neutral.
I don't think they have to be neutral but I think if they're not going to be neutral, they have to spell that out in their terms of service.
If they're not neutral, then they lose their free harbor. They become publishers.
Yeah,
they don't want to be publishers.
You're saying that we're going to treat you like a publisher legally if you, yeah.
Well, yeah, they don't have to, but their business model works only if they aren't considered publishers.
Yeah, because suddenly, like if Twitter is now considered legally responsible for everything posted on their platform, it's like, here come the lawyers, we've unleashed them, you've got about 5 minutes, have a nice life. I mean...
Yeah,
and Twitter has backed off. They took the fact check links off, and I'm sure they're going to have some mea culpa. Oh, we didn't mean that to happen. We're looking into the guy who's in charge of this, and you know it's been raised up that there's some biases, and we're going to look into that. Then they're going to try to get the government to back off, because you're right. If they're considered a publisher, they're hosed.
Yeah, and that's why I say they have to, or that they've been skirting the law is. all social media have been working under the protections of we're a open platform. Once those protections are taken away, any one of the major ones up right now would get sued into the ground. And I'm completely fine with that because it's the real only way I see competition entering into this market is if we actually hold them to the standards that are already there. Either be a neutral platform or we will just deem you a publisher because that's what you're doing and then treat you as a publisher. Right now, we kind of give them the option of saying what they are, and they say they're a neutral platform, and then they editorialize.
Yeah. So, and in the IRC, Sarkros has got a very good point that Reddit and Facebook have been a lot more heavy-handed than Twitter in this regard. And I think the reason Twitter's getting called out is because it's the one Trump uses and knows about. If Trump on Reddit, he'd be doing the same thing to them. He probably would have done it much sooner.
And I think YouTube's even more heavy-handed than Twitter. And I know that's not technically a social platform, but it's...
So I still use...
It kind of is.
We're talking about, DP Views bringing up that he doesn't use Reddit to know explicitly. So Reddit used to be a lot more fun. These days, I still use it to gather links for doing decking, and I still get feedback through the private messages. But Reddit as a platform for discussion and stuff like that is basically dead. If you don't fit the niche they want and you're in a popular subreddit, they're going to just shut you down like they did the Donald, like they did a bunch of the other fun subreddits. So, I mean, of all places, I think 4chan's probably got the best policy on it, right? Is it's like, yeah, post whatever the hell you want. If it's blatantly illegal, we'll take it down. If it's in the wrong area, we'll take it down. But... other than that, whatever, and when it rolls off, and who gives a shit, right? I mean, just because it's so no touch. But, and of course, and that's why you get some of these groups that come out of 4chan that are just completely crazy, but, people lose their mind over it, too. But I you imagine if Twitter losing their mind if Trump said, fuck this shit, I'm moving to some other platform, like Minds or one of the other platforms that's less restrictive?
Oh, that might actually help Minds out, but I don't know if Trump would do it.
Well, somebody would have to explain to him that this is the better platform to move to and that you've got enough of a following that everyone's going to leave, the one platform and go to the other.
I don't know about leaving it, but people would actually pay attention to Minds somewhat.
So, Mastodon instance for whitehouse.gov. Yes! And all the official Mastodon instances would immediately ban it for being a free speech zone. I thought about setting up Mastodon on G15. I really looked into it, and I was about to do it. And I got looking into how they operate with a lot of their sub-communities, standing up your own instances of it. And if you declare yourself a free speech zone, which is something, of course, I would want to do, because, fuck, I don't care what people say, You want to argue the virtues of I don't know white supremacy versus communism or something. I don't know what argument that would be. But if you wanted to do something like that, I don't care. I don't give a fuck. But it might be fun to read it out. I don't know. point and laugh. It's like look at these idiots arguing this shit. I don't care. But you look at the way the people running the main Mastodon instance set it up. Basically, anybody who doesn't censor to at least lightweight SJW standards, they block their servers on the main instances. It's like, oh, geez. Which really sucks because, the technology is great, but it's like whoever's in charge of their main platform is very, oh, that's a free speech zone. We can't have that. Oh my God. And maybe I read too much into that being the main instances. Maybe it doesn't matter the way Mastodon's set up, but I don't know. I looked at Matrix for a while, and that one looked interesting too, but that seemed more like a Skype replacement than like a Twitter replacement. So, anyways, I don't know. I think it'd be funny as hell if Trump said, screw you guys, I'm moving to a platform that doesn't do this stuff. Just to see Dorsey's reaction, because he's like, it's like, oh God, there goes our relevance. Because I think most people on people are on Facebook and Twitter at this point anymore out of like obligation. It's like, well, I don't really like these. You know, you talk to anybody, nobody likes the platforms anymore, but they feel like they have to use it because, like, that's where grandma is, or Twitter, because that's where, you know, they have all their marketing followers or whatever. So it's inertia at this point. It's like, I don't know that I've heard anybody say how much they like these platforms in the last several years. So.
And that's kind of why Trump's on Twitter. That's where the audience is. Think if he moved to Mastodon, a significant portion of Twitter would quit Twitter and move to Mastodon. And one other thing, he doesn't just want to speak to his base. So by significant portion, it couldn't just be all the people that are pro-Trump. You would need a decent size of anti-Trump to also move minds for it to matter.
And by the way, I have no particular love or dislove of Minds. That was just the first alternative that popped into my head. So, anyways, I've got nothing else on this. I just think it's kind of funny. So,
I think their fact-checking was accurate. I'm actually looking at some different articles right now, breaking down some mail-in voter frauds and just voter problems throughout the states.
Well, I mean, you're always going to have a little bit of a problem because, of course, does somebody want to swing an election? Of course they do. I mean, there's always going to be the impetus to cheat. And it might not even be with the explicit permission of the people at the top, right? If somebody's rigging the system in one way or the other, it may not be that the candidate that's getting rigged for knows anything about it. It's just, you know, some people are really, really passionate. And
oh, yeah, I doubt most. I doubt that most campaigns are active in the voter fraud area, but they don't need to be.
No, you've got somebody else who, I mean, you know, we'll just use the upcoming 2020. You know, there's going to be plenty of, you know, if you're talking voter fraud, you're going to have lots of people with reason to rig the system for Biden, not because they have any particular love of Biden, just because they really, really, you know, really hate the orange man. So, you know, I don't think, from what I have seen, not to get too political, but Biden is a stand-in. It's anybody with a D next to their name versus Trump, right? And Biden was the most milquetoast one they could put up there so that, you know, I don't know. I don't really want to get into it, but.
Well, when it comes to just not quite the political, but the whole, his actual tweet. Now, these numbers are a bit old because it is kind of hard to find numbers on votes because they are supposed to be confidential. But in 2012, almost 2 million dead Americans were still on our active voter rolls. So anyone who knew someone that passed that was a voter could go in, vote their ballot, then go into the same voter area if they are also registered in that same district just a couple hours later, and then vote their normal ballot and just cast two votes. 12 million voters in the U.S. Have errors in their voter rolls, like wrong addresses, so they're not voting in the correct districts. That's a problem when it comes to congressional elections. 2.75 million Americans are registered to vote in more than one state. So if you're in a state like mine, I can easily hop the border to four other states. And if I'm registered in any one of those other ones, I could easily cast two votes. Yeah, so I could throw a presidential election and maybe screw with some congressional election.
Well, I've lived in this state long enough. It may not be the case anymore, but I'm willing to bet for several years there, I could have easily gotten away with driving up and voting in more than one place.
If you haven't actively attempted to get yourself purged, might still be able to. Because whenever a state purges its voter rolls, they don't do it very often because immediately there's lawsuits over it.
Well, yeah.
They try to trust that individuals will be honest.
I haven't done anything to get myself off of, you know, my home state's rolls. I haven't voted there for 5 years, but I haven't done anything to actively remove myself. I just registered where I moved to, swapped the driver's license and all that over, and started getting my new voter card and all that shit. So I never even thought anything of it. But yeah, well, I mean, it's not like the states have a big registered database of this person lives over here.
Yeah. Hopefully they purged you. Our state's better at it than most. I know people that were purged due to inactivity, and they got annoyed as hell when they went to vote in a primary. Like, well, if you haven't voted for 6 years, they assumed you weren't a voter anymore.
Ooh. So we should do an experiment this year, Madman. You said 6 years. It's been 5 since I've lived there. It's like, what are you going to do? A little minor voter fraud just to see what happens. And Morbus is in jail. Son of a bitch. That'd be my luck.
Veritas has done it. They've walked in and tried to vote as the congressman in a district before. And they were allowed to. They didn't. They walked away before taking the ballot. But they've shown that you can walk in, just give a name, and they'll give you the ballot for that person. It happened in California.
Well, actually, though, both the state I'm in now and the state I came from checked ID, if I remember correctly. So
yeah.
I couldn't hand them my current driver's license and try to get away with it. Be like, sir, you don't live here. This is from Tennessee. Yeah, I could see that. Well,
it is easier in certain states than others, and you can check which ones are easier, and they tend to be blue.
Issues, you walk in and ask for the ballot with a name on it, and the actual person's name has already been in. Yeah, I could see that being a problem. It's like walk in right after Madman, and like, yes, I'm Madman. I'd like to vote. He left 5 minutes ago. Son of a bitch.
And those are the ones most likely to get caught.
Oh, yeah.
But you also have to think, whenever we have an election, less than 50% of Americans actually vote. So the president is usually decided by 26% of the voting population, voting age population. You have a 50-50 chance of picking somebody that's not even going to be in to vote.
Oh, yeah, just pick somebody who's, you know, on the younger side of things, and you're probably much more likely to win. It doesn't matter. Anyways, let's move on, just because it's getting late, and I don't want the show to run too long. Next article is from SiliconANGLE. I mean, did you have anything you wanted to close on that with?
No.
All right. Next article is from SiliconANGLE. GitLab runs a phishing test against its employees and 20% handed over credentials. There's always a lot of talk in cybersecurity about the importance of training employees to be aware of phishing attempts. Training does work, but it's not a panacea. The reality being that there will always be employees who get tricked even with training. There's a reason I wanted to do a phishing story tonight in decking, and that's because at work today, they ran a phishing test. And immediately in Slack, one of the help desk guys said, by the way, if anybody sees this, they're doing a phishing test. Don't click the link. It's like, you idiot. If you know it's a test, you don't tell people about it. All you do is fuck up the stats. But he didn't care. He just didn't want to get the phone calls. But so I actually sent him some statistics. It's like, you know this shit matters, right? It's like, go look at the 2019 FBI crime report. Or internet crime report, it's all phishing-based. It's all email fraud-based. Different kinds of email fraud, but I mean, at the end of the day, it's all based on getting you to click a link and either interacting with somebody, believing they're legit when they're not, or turning over credentials. Anyways. Although there are various industry estimates, code repository management firm GitLab decided to fish their own employees and see what would happen. That's not weird. Companies do that all the time. The result was not a good one. 1 in 5 employees fell for the fake emails. The exercise announced Wednesday involved GitLab emulating a phishing campaign against GitLab employees with the intent of capturing GitLab credentials. Defenses such as multi-factor authentication were not considered part of the test, with the fake phishing attack designed to mimic a basic attack concentrating on primary authentication credentials via a fake login page. Yeah, because it's pretty easy to call up the help desk and say, yeah, hey, I flushed my phone down the toilet. I don't have my multi-factor. Can you... you know, just remove it off my account until I get a new phone, you know, shit like that. It's not hard to do, and people do it. Especially because 9 times out of 10, you get a call like that, it's real. It's like, yeah, I don't have a phone right now. My kid smashed it with a hammer, and I don't have my multi-factor until I get a new phone, and Verizon says it'll be a few days. And what do most companies do? They turn the multi-factor off.
I don't know how my company would handle that. They might actually have me go back into the office.
They probably would for the moment, but you're in a more heavily regulated industry. Yeah, just call them up, tell them your nephew smashed your phone with a hammer and see what they sell you.
Why the hell did you let him play with your phone and a hammer at the same time?
Well, I didn't know they had the hammer. They're kids, right? I mean, they do shit.
Yeah. My niece had fun throwing my phone around a few times this weekend. She's a little over a year old. She couldn't throw it hard enough to break it.
Yep. Yep. Actually, the only question there is, wait a minute. If your phone smashed, how are you calling me? Skype.
Using my sister's phone?
Yeah. Well, can we set your multi-factor to your sister's phone? No, that's her phone.
I'm not going to have it in the morning when I have to go to work, but sure. Let's give them a token to try to get into our network.
Well, so here's the thing. I use that example because if you look up incident reports of, like, when DNS has gotten hijacked, that's usually what's happened, is if they had multi-factor, the people impersonating them have managed to get enough information about the account, you know, that they're able to call up the support desk for whatever company they get their DNS through. Be like, yeah, hey, this is so-and-so, and I can't get into my account. My cell phone spontaneously burst into flames because I think I had left it charging for a month too long. And, I can't get into my account. Can you guys reset it for me? Oh, yeah, my birth date is, my social is. And then, you know, of course, they'll have all this information from their target. And then they'll call up Cloudflare or whoever they're getting their services through and get back into the account and then send the DNS over to a phishing site or whatever. This shit happens all the time. So, and that's what ends up happening with multi-factor is you either have a self-service portal where you answer some questions. And because most people are honest in their security reset questions, you can get their answers off their Facebook page or their LinkedIn page. Or they call up the support desk for whatever company with the old, you know, the my phone is, you know, been abducted by aliens story. And then the next thing you know, the service desk guy just wanting to keep their numbers down and not being security trained is going to be like, yeah, okay, what do? We reset the credential. We turn off the multi-factor. All right, well, when you log back in, it's going to ask you to register a new multi-factor device. Can you do that? Oh, yeah, I can do that. Yeah, I've got an iPad here. I'll register to that. Okay, great, thanks. Because the service desk, you got to remember, their goal is not security. Their goal is not even good customer service. Their goal is call time. Their goal is pure, how many calls did you complete that day?
Keep it below this many minutes, and did you do the average number of calls or better? Yeah, I remember that problem. And I was working in an industry where I was actually supposed to solve the person's problems.
So
mortgage servicing for the win when it's over the damn phone.
Operational security, sir.
I didn't say which bank.
For fuck's sake, you didn't even say it was a... I'm moving on. New story. Yeah, phishing matters. Don't you know, seriously, don't take it lightly. And people are dumb. So, and that's the other problem too, is like, okay, that's, you know, all these companies collecting data on what you do on a day. But, it's, we all knew Mad Men worked for a bank. It's all good. Fuck. Oh, but did you know? No, I'm kidding. Anyways, they, you know, everybody thinks, oh, phishing, I'm never going to fall for phishing. It's not a big deal. It is a big deal. Actually, I went to a VR security conference right at the beginning of the lockdown, which was actually kind of fun. I think I even linked it in Decking. It was the InfoSec VR, or I don't remember exactly what it was called now. But one of the talks was on email fraud. And at first you're like, oh, yeah, this is going to be silly. And then you get into it, and you, and he starts giving you all the statistics and the accounts of people's lives who've been destroyed over this stuff. And it's like, oh, my God.
So, and if it's somewhat targeted, like they know which company they're going after, they're not going to send you an email from Bob's Crab Shack. It's going to be similar to a vendor name.
Mm-hmm. Or, you know, they'll do the wire transfer structure instruction thing. It's like, oh, yep, nope. Hey, we're representing this brokerage or this real estate agent, and you know, the buyer's account's actually, or the seller's account's actually this one. So when you wire the money to close out the home sale, you send it over here.
I'm hoping that one's not something that happens that often. I know I'm wrong. But you should, that's something you verify. You don't take email with that shit.
Mad Men.
I know I'm wrong, but I would love to live in the world where that's not the case.
This is where I admit I work for a bank, too, and tell you that shit happens all the time.
I know. But we have a policy of actually verifying. I assume everyone else would, too.
We do, too. Now.
No one follows the policy.
Yeah, there, nobody follows it, but it's also we do too now. We managed to catch it both times, but fuck.
So, our security's nice enough to label external emails as external.
I wrote the rule that does that! Yes!
I still see people falling for phishing when there's tests. I don't see them, but I see this. The security crew says the percentage of fail on this, they kind of want us to get better. So it's a goal of, get this to zero, guys. This is the percentage of people that fucked up. We're not going to tell you who's an idiot, but there are idiots that work for us. And this is with a label, external.
So Psychros is like, double check. People are wiring money for home sales. I wrote a check. It's like, okay. So when a mortgage is funded in the background, somebody is getting paid the full amount of that mortgage up front. It's not you're buying a house and that mortgage is now on a promise and you're making payments to the person you sold the house to. No. When I sold my house, when anybody sells a house, you get the full amount up front. Now, your mortgage will have an agreement that if you sell the home, they get first dibs on any money you get from the sale of that home to cover the mortgage. So the bank wires the money from the one bank account, from the funding bank account to the seller's bank account. And that might be a fund on a mortgage brokerage company. That might be a fund through a real estate agent. Or that might just be the seller's bank account. It depends. If there's a mortgage on the house that's being sold, like if the person doesn't own it free and clear, it'll be to the bank that holds the mortgage on the house currently. And then, so they'll wire however much is owed to the bank to that account, and then they'll probably cut the seller a check for the difference. But, yes, the banks in the background wire money around to fund mortgages. And usually they have to do it, a week or so before the closing of a home so that the mortgage is quote-unquote funded and it's ready to go. But, so you'll have people get into the email accounts for real estate agents and mortgage brokers, and they'll just read the email, and they'll find somewhere in that email account what it looks like when they send wire transfer instructions to a funding bank, Photoshop that with a different account in it, either send it from the hacked account or spin up a fake account, you know, with the name of the mortgage brokerage at gmail.com is the one I saw. I actually wrote a rule in our email system that anything that had .com at gmail.com in it, to flag it. Because we had people, we had a group that was spinning up fake Gmail accounts for some very commonly known
Bob.Susan at bankofamerica.gmail.com.
It was bankofamerica.com at gmail.com, yes. So it was the person's name without the at symbol, bankofamerica.com at gmail.com. That was the full email address. And it looked ridiculous. That is amazing.
And they didn't notice the Gmail at the end. They're just saying, oh, it says Bank of America. That's got to be legit.
And it looks right. And because you've got people who are overworked and they don't want to take the time to... It's like, no, no. You have a policy that says when you get wire transfer instructions, you call and verify. So you know what the scammers do? They put a fake fucking phone number in the email wire transfer instructions instead. So people don't go up to the account, say, okay, who's the account manager? Let me call them up, verify these wire transfer instructions. Nope, they call the email and they call the number and the fucking signature of the fake wire transfer instructions. And it's like, oh, yes, very much. These are our instructions. Wow, Joe, you sound different today. Oh, yes, very much. I mean, you know.
Okay, so we've got to see if we can, I don't know, convince several idiots that... we're either Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, and here's our new wire instructions.
My man, if you have a bank account that will accept a wire and a way of masking your identity so that you can get away with it. Because the problem is, what'll happen is the moment that money's wired in, you better be shuffling it around. Because very, very quickly... they're going to get a note from the receiving bank saying, are you going to wire this money? It's like, well, we did. We followed your latest wire transfer instruction. Then the receiving bank goes, what wire transfer instructions?
Oh, I'm hoping that no one at any bank is dumb enough to take new wiring instructions for either of those companies. I don't think they've ever changed.
Madman. I'm really sorry to tell you this, but people are dumb.
Yeah, okay, you're right, they are.
You know my job title. You know what I do in the day. People are dumb. So, ready to move on?
Yeah, well, that's why I chose those two banks, because any other one I could see... a change. Those two will never fucking change. They're also two of the largest, so if we can convince some idiots, we'll get dozens of payments within, I don't know, an hour.
So it's not those two that they target. Usually they target somebody doing a refi or a new purchase. Fannie and Freddie are on the back end. They purchase existing mortgages. This is where you're fucking over somebody trying to buy a house, not fucking over the government out of funding a house that's already been purchased. So what usually, and I've talked to a few guys in the FBI, and basically when this happens, if the money gets moved and they don't get it caught quick enough to reverse the transactions, because with the wire transfer, it's essentially done. Like credit card transactions and all that kind of other, you know, consumer level money moves, those are pretty easy to trace in reverse. When you're talking bank-to-bank wire transfers, once that money's moved, it's moved. And the only way to get it back is to hope the receiving institution said, that's weird. Why did that just happen? Let's put a hold on that account.
Yeah, because the sending institution can't put a hold once they hit enter.
That's right.
It's gone.
So, yeah. Like I said, where I work, we've been lucky. We've managed to, you know, recover. But I've talked to several guys in the FBI, and that's part of my day job, and most people aren't that lucky. Because here's what happens. So the institution that sent the money then starts saying, well, we followed your instructions and sent the money. And then the institution that never got paid said, well, you didn't get paid, so we're not going to honor this mortgage. So we can't move forward because we haven't received our money. And it goes back and forth, and usually law enforcement gets involved, and then you start trying to finger blame, and okay, who did this, and whose email account was compromised. And what almost never happens is they're not going to produce another set of money to fund that mortgage so the person buying the house gets their house. And a lot of times, there's been a few instances where there's the institution that sent the money still wanted the person who signed the mortgage to pay them, even though they never got their house, because the money was stolen.
Well, title insurance usually covers that.
That wasn't the story I was told, but I don't remember the details. It's been a bit. So I don't remember why, but yeah, apparently they started going after the guy who signed the mortgage, saying, well, you need to be paying us back for this money. And he's like, but I didn't get my house because you all sent it to the wrong bank. You know, why should I pay this mortgage when you didn't do what you were supposed to do? That's breach of contract. And apparently it went to court and got very expensive. But nobody ever recovered the stolen money. Phishing matters. That's the point I'm getting at. I don't know why people trust email. Never trust email. It's so easy to spoof it. Anyways. Next article is from The Verge. Microsoft copied its new Windows Package Manager from rival APP, Git, claims developer. I was very confused when I first read this article. So I'm like, what, the Debian Package Manager? No. There was actually somebody who wrote a package manager for Windows called apt-get, APP, not APT. Like on Linux, it's apt-get, like on Debian and Ubuntu. So it's a difference of a single letter, so it's a little confusing. But Microsoft surprised everyone with its new Windows Package Manager, WinGit, last week. But it looks like the company copied the core mechanics from a developer it provided, or from a developer it interviewed and then ghosted. Kevin Begay, the developer behind the package manager apt-get, has provided a detailed account of Microsoft reaching out to him last year with interest in his work before going quiet and then launching its own WinGit rival. It sounds like Sherlocking, a term that refers to Apple undercutting a third-party app by building the functionality directly into macOS or iOS, but in the Microsoft and Windows world. apt-get is a free, and I'm saying it that way on purpose because I keep wanting to say apt. apt-get is a free and open-source package manager for Windows, which automates installing software on Windows PCs. It caught the attention of Microsoft last year after Andrew Sinek, a program manager responsible for the app model at Microsoft, reached out to apt-get developer Kevin Begay. The conversations eventually led to Sinek inviting the developer to interview for a role at Microsoft that would see him working on improving software distribution in Windows through his work on apt-get. Begay interviewed in December, but then never heard anything back from the company for nearly 6 months until he received a 24-hour heads-up that Microsoft was launching WinGit last week. When I finally saw the announcement and the GitHub repositories, I was shocked, upset. I wasn't even sure what I was looking at, said Begay. Begay claims the core mechanics, terminology, and manifest format and structure, even the package repository folder structure of Microsoft's WinGit, are heavily inspired by apt-get. Microsoft only briefly mentions apt-get once in its announcement in a throwaway line that lists other Windows package managers. What was copied with no credit is the foundation of the project, how it actually works, explains Begay in a separate Reddit post. And I don't mean the general concept of package app manager. WinGit works pretty much identically to the way apt-get works. Begay is now ceasing work on apt-get as Microsoft forges ahead with WinGit. In an email to The Verge, he said there is no point in competing. I don't think fragmenting the ecosystem will benefit anyone, says Begay. Apt-get will now be shut down on August the 1st, and Begay is most unhappy with how Microsoft didn't credit him with his work. Wow. Yeah, I mean, they interviewed the guy and then just like, you know, figured out it was open source. I'm like, oh, hell, We'll just write our own. And that happens, unfortunately.
That's a crappy downside to open source.
It really is. Well, and that's one of the downsides of tying your open source project to something like a Windows or an iOS or an Apple ecosystem, right? Is Linux and Android are ostensibly open source. So when you tie your ecosystem to those, there's no risk of the company that owns the ecosystem grabbing up your work and integrating it into the OS, right? Because he's tied it to a closed source platform in the form of Windows, all he could do would be to go back to Microsoft and say, here's the portions of my code you copied. I'm suing you for violation of the GPL. But that's assuming they even copied his code. It sounds more like they used his project as inspiration for their own. And a package manager is not a new idea anymore, so I don't know what kind of grounds he has to stand on. So I get kind of why he's just throwing up his hands and saying, fuck it, I'm not going to do my own package manager since you guys are doing one. I think it's kind of shitty to interview the guy and then just decide they're going to write their own with Adam, right? I think it's shitty, but I don't think it's illegal or wrong. What's DPView saying? If he didn't want them to use it, he should have given it GPL license or something and take them to court. He used an Apache 2 license. Oh. Protesters in Minneapolis have burned the precinct. Yeah. That's been going on. Okay, so yeah, he used Apache 2, not GPL. Yeah, you're kind of right there, is that you may not have picked the right license. Although by using Apache 2, it's easier for companies to pick it up and use it. But let's see. The announcement was especially bad given how little credit was given to apt-get compared to other projects, said Begay. He was looking for recognition from Microsoft more than anything. I think some attribution credit would be fair, but I don't think it really matters what I'd like to happen, said Begay, noting he was blown away by the response to his blog post. When writing the article, I tried to be as factual and fair as I possibly could, said Begay, and it has been extremely gratifying to know I'm not crazy and the whole situation was as unfair as I thought, and outsiders tend to agree. Other developers of open source software have found themselves in similar situations where Microsoft's own software has been heavily inspired by alternatives that are free and open source. Brisbane-based software developer Paul Stovall warned earlier this year that Microsoft does its homework on open source alternatives. If Microsoft released its own competitor, then Stovall says it's unlikely they didn't do their research or weren't aware of the alternative. Let's see, they've got similar situations highlighted. I meant to look at that earlier. Turner partnerships with Microsoft. Okay, that's people talking about different deploy for DevOps and Azure. So apparently they've been doing that for some of the Azure platform. We reached out to Microsoft for comment on apt-get situation. The company says it's investigating. We regret to hear about this candidate's experience or reviewing the circumstances internally. So there's a non-comment. It's like, oh yeah, sorry about that. We'll look into it. This candidate's, so they're not even looking into it as, you know, we stole this guy's work. We're looking into it as, well, he interviewed with us and, you know, we don't know what happened.
Well, if they're just copying the functionality without the code, then they definitely didn't do anything wrong.
Well, it's not illegal. It's just
shitty. It might be a dick move.
Yeah, it's a dick move. But you're right. I mean, and they could come back and say, well, we looked at the apt-get code and we couldn't integrate it because of reasons X, Y, and Z, so we decided it was better to recreate our own. And at that point, we decided we didn't need him. So, I mean, I could see Microsoft coming back and giving a list of technical reasons why they decided to write their own code rather than, you know, buying apt-get by hiring the developer of it, right? So, and there may be very real technical reasons they did that, but yeah, on the surface, it looks shitty. I think you're right. I don't think it's illegal or even... I mean, it just looks like a dick move. Last article I have for us tonight, which is good because we're over an hour, and I actually had less articles to start with, and we just spent that long talking about politics. I usually try to, I mean, I don't mind digging into politics, but I try not to dwell on them on this, on decking, and, well, here we are. This one's just funny. It's from Ars Technica. A $350 anti-5G device is not that.
Anti-5G device. They're trying to fight the corona?
Believers of 5G conspiracy theories have apparently been buying a $350 anti-5G USB key that, not surprisingly, appears to be a regular USB stick with 128 megs of storage, which is old stock. That's just they're taking old stock of tiny flash drives and repurposing it and selling it as literal snake oil. As noted by the BBC today, the 5G BioShield USB stick was recommended by a member of the Glastonbury Town Council's 5G Advisory Committee, which has called for an inquiry into 5G. The company that sells 5G BioShield claims it is the result of the most advanced technology currently available for balancing and prevention of the devastating effects caused by non-natural electric waves, particularly but not limited to 5G, for all biological life forms. There's a... There's a line. The product's website charges 283 euros for a single... Is that euros? That's pounds. I'm sorry. Read that wrong. 283 pounds for a single 5G BioShield, which converts to nearly $350. That's what it costs to get protection for your home and family thanks to a wearable holographic nano layer catalyzer, which can be worn or placed near a smartphone or any other electrical radiation or EMF emitting device. It's a holographic sticker and it does nothing. The 5G BioShield. Did I read that already? No, I didn't. The 5G BioShield makes it possible, thanks to a uniquely applied process of quantum nanolayer technology, to balance the imbalanced electrical oscillations arising from all electric fog induced by all devices, such as laptops, cordless phones, and WAN, tablets, etc., or WLAN, tablets, etc., the company says, adding that the USB stick brings balance into the field at the atomic and cellular level, restoring balanced effects to all harmful ionized and non-ionized radiation. Fuck, take this USB stick, plug it in, and walk in a nuclear reactor, you'll be fine. They'll be pissed off when you shut off the when it shuts off the nuke, though.
Oh, my crap. They just put a bunch of techno bubble in front of USB stick.
I mean, this isn't even Star Trek levels of techno babble. This is like Google Translate out of one of those AI song completion thing levels of techno babble. The USB stick apparently doesn't even need to be plugged into anything to work its magic. It's always on and working. That's why we use quantum nano layer technology, the company says in FAQ. Quantum? What the hell is quantum nano layer?
It's time. It's time nuclear nanites. Micro machines that can control time and the weak and strong atomic force.
We dipped it into the red energy coming out of the hell portal. We think it's fine.
Don't use the green energy. It grows scales at that point and looks ugly. Still just as functional, but it's creepy as fuck.
And it kind of crawls around the room, you know? I mean, you got to stomp on it then. You know, the device allegedly produces a wider field of protection when it is plugged in. To answer the question of where it is...
It'll even work without electricity. It just works better with electricity.
My flashlight doesn't work very well without electricity, but it still kind of works. Kind of reflects a little bit of light here and there. But when you turn it on, when you get electricity... For fuck's sake... To answer the question of whether the stick needs to be charged regularly, the FAQ says no. The input charge only expands the field effect from a 4-meter radius to a 20-meter plus radius when plugged into a USB wall charger or a computer. Fortunately, you can use the 5G BioShield without disabling your Wi-Fi. The USB key doesn't block your Wi-Fi signals, the company said, and said the product transmutes the signals and harmonizes. It's alchemy. It's fucking alchemy. and harmonizes all harmful frequencies into life-affirming frequencies. It's life-affirming alchemy. Just like the dog in Full Metal Alchemist, right?
They have Shaw Tucker working for them.
I just, oh my God, transmutes the signals of fucking alchemy. But what does the USB BioShield actually consist of? The BBC pointed out to a recent teardown by a security company Pen Testing Partners, which found the device is a USB stick with 128 megs of storage. When plugged into our test machine, so here's the quote from the company. When plugged into our test machine, we may have missed the bubble of quantum holographic catalyzing technology appearing. The stick appears...
Keep going. I just had to laugh at it.
The stick comes loaded with a 25-page PDF version of the material from 5G BioShield's website. It added a Q&A. It includes a Q&A of distances for the bubble and how to know if it is working. It's always on system, apparently, is always working, powered or not, so no visual checks needed. A review of the stick's properties revealed nothing more than what you would expect from a regular 128-meg USB key, and we weren't even sure that 128 megs are still in production. Ultimately, the 5G BioShield is nothing more than a 5 euro or 5 pound USB key with a sticker on it. The people at Pentest wrote, whether or not the sticker provides $300 worth of quantum holographic catalyzer technology will leave for you to decide. Pentesting Partners said that trading standards body should investigate the product, and that is apparently now happening. London Trading Standards has since told the BBC it launched a probe, and they've got a bunch of images that it's a USB key with a sticker on it. And you know, they've got, let's see, the bubble and auras and some badly photoshopped images, and it looks like not only does it have a sticker on it, but that they glued it to a piece of acrylic. So I didn't check this earlier. Let me see if they actually have any pictures from the Pen Testing Partners teardown. Let's see. So, yep, that's a USB key with a piece of lasered acrylic glued to it. There's the drive properties. It's 128 meg. Looks like they plugged it into a Linux device and pulled up its device identifier. It's a USB 2.0 mass storage device. They found the serial number. It's a USB key. In fact, yep, there's where they took it apart. Oh, I've still got a couple of those. It's one of those old school flash drives that's super tiny, that, you know, most of the drive is actually in the USB port. And so they broke open the metal casing, and it's a flash drive with a piece of acrylic and a holographic sticker. That's it. People paid £300 for it. Snake oil. Gentlemen, we have found the snake oil. I've got nothing else on that. Madman, do you have anything on that before I hit the decking or the dojo sound effects?
The magic is all in the sticker. It's like those toys from the 80s. Magic's all in the sticker.
Two things for you tonight in Digital Dojo. The first is a file encryption tool called Deadbolt, and it's a very simple drag-and-drop AES-256 file encryptor. So looks like they're pretty much, so it's primarily targeted at Mac users, but it looks like it'll build on any of your major OSs, Windows, Linuxes. They've got releases you can download. It's open source, looks like here. It's in GitHub, and it's written in Electron, so it's actually JavaScript. It's actually just forking part of Node.js that implements the encryption protocol. So it's a dead simple file encryptor, and I forgot to post the link, so let me do that real quick. But the nice thing about a file encryptor versus a drive encryptor is if you just need to encrypt a handful of files to dump on a flash drive or to email or throw up on like a file locker or sharing site or something like that, or to dump in Slack. Dead simple, easy to use. So, you know, something to play with. And so that's Deadbolt. And then the last thing I have for tonight, and I have a feeling I've covered this in decking before, but it's been a long time. There is an exploit search engine called Sploitus. So, and they've just recently updated their engine. Pretty much the way this thing works is this is an exploit search engine. So you punch in the name of the software you want to exploit. So, I don't know, WordPress, right? So I punch in WordPress and hit search. And it comes back with over 200 results for there's a password cracker, WordPress drag and drop file upload, contact form shell, WordPress WooCommerce, advanced order exploit, cross-site scripting, WordPress Chop Slider 3 SQL injection. So, yeah, this is a nice little exploit search engine. Works great. It's clean, simple. You know, I don't know that it's terribly unique anymore. There's tons of these out there, but this seems like a nice one. So, you know, next time you're trying to break into a website and you figure out what they're running, you can go punch it into here and see if you can find a pre-made exploit to use. Save yourself some time. I guess I should do the whole, if you're trying to break into a website, make sure it's something you're contracted to break into or... you know what? Fuck it. Just don't do illegal shit and blame it on me. I don't care if you're breaking into other people's websites. I mean, really. It keeps me in a job at the end of the day, right? So.
It only keeps you in the job if they're breaking into your website.
No.
Don't tell them to break into your website. That's needless work.
No. If they're breaking into other people's websites and it ends up in the news, that also keeps me in a job because then my boss is like, well, we don't want that to happen to our website. We better keep Morps in a job. So. that's all I've got for tonight. Of course, in the IRC tonight, we have myself, Sardonyx, Crabman, the Bot, Psychros, DP View, Madman, and the Coffee Maker. Or is that Coffin Maker? Nope, that's the Coffee Maker. Okay. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure Decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site, the subreddit. We used to do a Twitter thing, but I haven't updated that thing in a very long time, so it's probably been broken for years. And actually, for the lead story tonight, Psychros sent to me on the subreddit through just Morps on Reddit. So if you want to send me articles and things to look at, that's where you do that. We used to have a contact form on the website, but I think I took that down. I don't remember now. I did see the other link you saw me, Psychros. Yeah. We'll just leave it at that. I did see it. Anyways, that's all I have for tonight. Madman, closing thoughts.
Red gummy bears are amazing.
I'm not really a fan of gummy bears. Like, I order all these 3D printer parts, and they keep coming with packages of gummy bears, and I don't really like gummy bears.
You know why they send gummy bears?
It's kind of tradition at this point that... Although I ordered a mosquito hotend, and that one came with suckers, and they're like the good high-end suckers. I appreciated that one. But, yeah, I don't really know where the thing with the gummy bears came from. I think Prusa started doing it at one point, but I might be misremembering who actually started it. But yeah, a lot of 3D printing companies, you order parts, filament, machines, they tend to come with a package of gummy bears. Which, I mean, cool. I know a lot of people really dig gummy bears, but I just never got into them. I don't know. Maybe it's a texture thing or something, but I just never liked gummy bears. So, Anyways, that's all I got. I think we're just going to close out the show on that.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Time to go nose down and call it a night.
Hairy bipedal species of space lizards offer their own unique benefits. Tauntauns, Mr. President.
Shut up, Wesley.